Good morning. I also need to say a word of thanks, echoing Derek's comments. Turns out, by the way, once you're here a while, you end up saying thank you a lot, because this is a gracious group of people. Celine sent me a text because she knew I would forget right before I got up here. Before you start preaching, make sure you say thank you to everybody who's been so kind over this last week or so with her surgeries and checking in on us and praying for us. And it's just been a lot of graciousness. That is not even a surprise anymore. It's come to be the norm here, and I appreciate that very much. This morning, we begin a new series that will come out of the Gospel of Mark. Some of the early chapters, not in any particular order, just because I want to. We're going to look at a handful of passages. Mark, to me, early on in my life in preaching, was kind of a mystery. I could read Matthew and say, okay, I kind of get the point of Matthew. And I could read Luke and say, I kind of get what Luke's about. I could read John, and I love John. I could say, okay, here's what John's doing. I see it. When I'd read Mark, obviously he's telling the story of Jesus, and I don't doubt that. But you say, what is the point? What makes Mark different than Matthew, Luke, or John? What is Mark about? And it took me a long time to kind of come to a conclusion that there were some features of the Gospel of Mark that really were distinctive, and I came to love the book of Mark as I discovered them. And one of those features is that Mark is presenting Jesus as a man of action and a man of power. Even though, at the same time, Mark lets you in on the secret that Jesus doesn't look like a man of action or a man of power. That is to say, if you're a Roman in the ancient Roman world, you knew what a powerful conqueror, general, lord, emperor should look like. And Jesus does not look like any of those things. In many ways, it would be easy to look at Jesus and see only weakness, and you'd have a fair point. But what Mark demonstrates is, in the course of the life of Jesus, Jesus demonstrates that he is more than capable of handling the evil that faces us in this world. And that, in fact, is our question this morning. Is Jesus strong enough to overcome the evil in our world? And really, there's kind of two questions in that. Number one, is there any evil in our world? You'd say, well, I don't think we have to answer that one. You might be surprised. A lot of Christians get tripped up by that, I think, in two extremes. Some Christians say, yes, there is evil in the world, and it's winning, and it's hopeless, and we're doomed, and they fall prey to a dark kind of skepticism about everything they see. I understand where it comes from. Turn off the news, folks. There are days where you just kind of need to unplug from social media and so forth and say, that is not a true picture of what the world looks like. But when you're only looking at that, it's easy to think that evil is on the rise, on the march, it's winning, and in fact, Christianity is doomed and the end is nigh. On the other hand, there are Christians that are kind of Pollyanna about it, that say, no, the world's basically a good place, nothing bad really ever happens. Yeah, a few things once in a while, but it's not a big deal. My life has been good, I'm not really suffering, things are pretty good, everybody must be the same way. And they tend to overlook just how comfortable and privileged and blessed most of our lives are. That in a room like this, not everybody has that. And that there are a lot of people outside this room that have it very bad, that there is a lot of evil in the world. So those are the two extreme, kind of the gloom and doom, evil is winning, and the what's evil point of view. And I think Christians, if you were going to think like Christ thinks, take that moderate in-between view that says, yes, there is real evil in the world, and Christ has come to defeat it. He's capable, he's powerful, and he can get the job done, including not just the cosmic evil in the world, but the specific evil in your own life. That sometimes we think Jesus can be powerful enough to overcome the evil of somewhere in the world, but not mine. I mean, I'm a sinner. I've got problems, and I've got flaws, and I've got things wrong with me that Jesus can't fix, but he's great for you. And what I want us to see in Mark's gospel is that Jesus is being presented as someone who is not naive about the state of the world and of the state of your life. He's fully aware of what he's up against and is prepared to deal with it. The text today comes from Mark chapter 3, beginning in verse 20, where we get a little insight into how other people saw Jesus. Then he went home, and the crowd gathered again, so they could not even eat. And when his family heard it, they went out to seize him, for they were saying, he is out of his mind. And the scribes who came down from Jerusalem were saying, he is possessed by Beelzebul, and by the prince of demons he cast out the demons. So Jesus is carrying out this remarkable life that we skipped over. The first two chapters of Mark is action-packed, better than any superhero movie. Jesus is casting out demons right and left in chapters 1 and 2. And then in chapter 3, he's already famous for it. And so he comes back home, and a prophet's not without honor except in his own home. And he goes back home, and they don't see Jesus the Messiah. They see little bratty child Jesus that they knew as a kid, all grown up and thinking he's, you know, more than he should have been, right? Thinking too much of himself, and people think too much of him, and this is unrealistic. And so the family says, Jesus has gone mad. Like he's clearly lost his mind. He doesn't understand the way the world really works. He doesn't really know who he himself is. He's crazy. People on the outside of the house are critics as well. When they look at Jesus, they say he is possessed by Beelzebul, the lord of the dung, the lord of the flies, of the dung heap, the lord of filth. A demon of some kind has come into the person of Jesus and given him power, and he's not mad, he's possessed. But he's definitely not sane, right? He has got something wrong with him. There's something wrong with the world, and it's probably Jesus, is their point of view. And when I read that passage, I encounter, I think, the first problem we have. There's no greater evidence for the rule of Satan in this world than that Jesus could be confused with him. Is there evil in the world? There really is. And here's how I know it, that some people can look at Jesus and think he's the problem. And that even hasn't changed. People could look at Christian claims and say those people are delirious. People could look at, well, as the prophet said, they could call evil good and good evil. That we are so morally confused in our culture as they were in that culture, what Jesus called a perverse generation, that we don't even know which one is which. Our original question was, is there evil in the world? The deeper problem is we don't even sure which one is which. We don't notice good when we see it. We look at Jesus challenging the status quo, and we assume that must be bad because the status quo must be good. You know who thinks that way? Everybody. Conservatives think that way. Progressives think that way. Religious people think that way. Irreligious people think that way. We all like a good status quo. We all like it when things are comfortable. And Jesus comes in to challenge that, and we all get up in arms about it. And we start to see him as the problem. And that's sad. That's the true madness of our age and of his. But Jesus has a response to this claim that perhaps he's casting out demons by the power of demons. He says, and he called them to him and said to them in parables, how can Satan cast out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, the house will not be able to stand. Jesus does something here that's truly unique and just nearly miraculous. It's a funny word that's really lost on us, but I want to try to introduce it to you. You may have heard it before. The word is logic. He tries to use a rational argument to say, have you thought about what you're saying? He says, there is real evil in the world. So is Jesus naive? No, he doesn't respond to them by saying, Satan, that's a fairy tale. There's no evil in the world. There's no demon possession in the world. There's no Satan in the world. There's no darkness in the world. He said, no, it's very real. Satan's influence is a kingdom unto itself. But he says, if you see somebody fighting evil, he isn't it. If you see somebody fighting evil, that person in all likelihood is not evil. In modern culture, we've gotten so bad at knowing who our friends are that we're suspicious of everybody and skeptical of everybody. And if you do good differently than I think we should do good, then you must be doing good wrong and you're bad and you're evil. And Jesus says, hey, that's not the way it works. And this comes up repeatedly in the ministry of Jesus. His disciples on one occasion come to him and say, we saw a guy casting out demons, but he wasn't one of us, so we told him to stop. And they're like really proud of themselves, right? And Jesus, you can just see him pulling his hair out. You saw somebody casting out demons and you told him to stop? You understand the demons are the bad guys. If someone is casting out demons, even if you don't know them, they're the good guys. This isn't so complicated as you're making it. Jesus will say things like, if you're not against me, you're for me, and if you're not for me, you're against me. He says it's pretty simple. The Bible is shockingly black and white about that point. There is real good and real evil in the world, and if you disagree on everything else, we can know something about each other by, are you doing good or are you doing evil? Jesus said, does it even make sense what you just said? That a madman, I mean, here's to the family sees him casting out demon possession. Think about this now. Demon-possessed people, not notoriously sane, okay? Demon-possessed people, a little odd, okay? Jesus cast out their demons, do they get more or less sane? Probably more. And their conclusion was, he must be a madman. The madman is making people sane. Again, that doesn't make sense. To the others, you got demons. Satan, Beelzebul, pick your boogeyman, he says, is the prince of evil. Does it make sense that he would be the one telling his own troops to stand down and let the good guys win? He says, you aren't even thinking this through. You are so troubled by something you didn't expect that you are no longer capable of recognizing good and evil when you see it. And I don't want to beat this point to death, but I see that in us every day. Every day, I see us confusing surprise with evil and putting outrage in the place of morality. And folks, those things are not the same thing. We need to assess good and evil sensibly, like Jesus does, and consider it. But he's not done. He says, and furthermore, if Satan has risen up against itself or against himself and is divided, he cannot stand, but is coming to an end. Again, logic on display here. He says, let me go a step further. Let's say you're right. Let's say I am the advocate of Satan himself, casting out demons. He says, if you see a henchman of Satan casting out the minions of Satan, let him do it. Again, good for us. Because if Satan starts opposing Satan, that's good news. That doesn't make any sense, right? Step one, it's illogical. But number two, to put it another way, even if you're right, you're wrong. Like, even if you're right, if you could convince yourself that I am an agent of Satan, am I increasing the good in the world or decreasing it when I cast out demons? There's real evil in the world and I'm making it go away. If evil starts opposing evil, let it go. It's the only lesson we learned from Frozen. Just let it go. There, if you see that in the world, if you encounter an instance where something or someone you are diametrically opposed to is doing something good, hush. I don't know if they're on our side or not. I don't know if they're good people or not. But if you see somebody doing something good, don't oppose it just because they're in the wrong side of the political camp or the church camp or whichever aisle we're on. If somebody does something good, say yay, or at least be quiet about it. If Satan, for some reason, starts casting out Satan, cheer. But again, we've lost sight of that in our sectarianism, in our partyism. And that's a dangerous place to belong to. Jesus has a more realistic picture of the world than we do. We look around and say, which group of people is evil? Jesus says, you know what's evil? Demons. The messengers of hell are evil. If you're on their side, also evil. If you are opposed to them, you're on my side. And it's really that simple. We've made it way too complicated. That's the knockout punch. Even if you're wrong, you're right. Or even if you're right, you're wrong, he says. But this just can't make sense. But then he goes a step further, and this is really the point I want to drive home today, about what is Jesus doing about evil. He says, no one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man. Then indeed, he may plunder his house. You may have noticed in verse 20, 21, 22, it said he spoke to them in parables, right? This is the parable part. It's a riddle, okay? Sometimes Jesus uses a riddle. Rather than just telling you something up front, like he did a verse ago, he gives you a riddle so you can think about it. You're supposed to chew on it, gnaw on it, think about it, and then later at home you go, oh, okay? That's what this statement is. We're going to try to have one of those moments. We're going to think about it. He says, imagine you're trying to rob someone. Isn't this a great parable? Right? Jesus starts, imagine you're a thief. I always love it when Jesus' parables involve terrible people. Imagine you're a bandit, and you're trying to rob someone. And you happen to know that in this home, there is a giant, hulking, muscle-bound strong man with a club. And he's standing by the door, ready to beat you over the head if you take his stuff. Let's say you're a good thief. You probably don't charge in and take him on head on or pretend he's not there. Okay? He says, what you do, you're going to find a way to tangle up the strong man. You're going to find a way to disarm the strong man. You're going to find a way to bind him and prevent him from stopping you. Because it doesn't do you any good to have a bag full of his prized possessions walking out the door if he's awake and coming for you. Okay? Here's the strange story. In this parable, Jesus isn't the strong man. Jesus is the thief. Isn't that funny? Jesus is the thief. He says, I came to this world and I knew what I was getting into. Jesus is not naive. He knows the grip that Satan has on this world. Jesus knows that sin has infested this world. Jesus knows that lies have infested this world. Jesus knows that addiction has infested this world. He is not naive. He didn't think when he came to earth that we would all just roll over and say, oh, you are Lord. That's fantastic. He fully expected opposition. You understand that? That he came with that in mind. It wasn't a surprise when he got here. Oh, someone else is in charge down here. I had no idea. He knew full well what he was getting into. He says, when I came prepared to steal you away from the man who thinks he runs the house. And I came to tie up the strong man. You understand the implication of that? Jesus says, all your life you have been bullied and domineered by evil. All your life you've known nothing but servitude and sin. All your life you've only known a world where Satan seemed like he was in charge. Jesus says, I know that world too. And I came prepared to actually change it. With that in mind, then, we get this conclusion that there is real evil in the world, and Jesus has come to defeat it. As simple as that statement is, I want you to ponder it a moment, because that means there's nothing in your life that is going to surprise him. Okay? You're the goods he's trying to rob away from evil. He's trying to steal you. Of course, we know that's kind of tongue-in-cheek because you belong to him anyway, in all fairness, but go with the metaphor, right? He's trying to steal you away. And that means he already knows who or what has you in its power. He is not naive to evil. Yeah, Ben, but my sins are really bad. He knows. Yeah, but I've really got problems. He knows. Yeah, but I'm strongly addicted. He knows. Not only does he know, he knew. Before day one, when he began his mission, he knew what was in store for him and the strength of opposition that he was going to face. and he came anyway. What does that tell you? Folks, if you tell me there is a fearsome, challenging, deadly, mortal enemy around the corner, I'm not going around the corner, okay? Because I'm weak and cowardly like that. I'm going to go a different way. If you tell somebody there is a deadly, threatening, powerful, menacing enemy around the corner, and that guy goes around the corner anyway, he thinks that he's able to do it. He thinks that he's going to win. He believes that his power is sufficient for whatever adversary he may meet. So when you read the book of Mark, that's what Jesus is showing us over and over again. Here's a passage in Mark 1, verse 27. And they were all amazed. You don't have to know what. This gets said on like every page of the book of Mark. A miracle, and they were all amazed. There was a miracle, and they were all amazed. And they were all amazed. So they questioned among themselves, saying, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." But what Jesus is doing is on every page of Mark demonstrating the power that he has over the evil that he knows. You ever wonder why the gospel doesn't start in Mark, like chapter 15? I mean, isn't the gospel the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ? Why do we get 14 chapters of Jesus casting out demons and stuff first? Because Jesus needs you to know that he doesn't die on the cross because Satan surprised him. Every page of Mark is a reminder that God in Christ Jesus is more powerful than the evil in the world, and he has come to defeat it. When he goes to the cross, it's not because Satan ambushed him. It's because he intended to go to the cross. And when he's raised on Sunday morning, it was because he intended to be raised on Sunday morning, because that is what he's here to do, to tie up the strong man and take you back from the one you think you belong to now. There is nothing in your life that is going to surprise him. There is no shame in your life that is greater than his power to overcome it. There is no sin in your life that is of greater significance than the forgiveness he purchased with his blood. That is what he came to do, and that is what he does. Jesus proves on every page of Mark's gospel that he is stronger than Satan, that he is stronger of every embodiment of evil in this world, that he knows the difference when we don't, and that he's here to win, and he can win in your life. And what we have to do is stop doubting that. He's not confused. There's never a page in the book of Mark where Jesus says, "Boy, I'm not sure what's going on here." Lots of pages where people say, "Maybe he's got a demon," or "Maybe he's lost his mind." We're the ones confused. He knows he's about his business. We've got to get that sorted in our head, that he is able to defeat what ails us, and he does it every day. Would you bow with me in a word of prayer? Our Father and our God, we thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ, and the immense power that he put on display time and time and time again. We thank you for his power over cosmic evil, of spiritual evil, of demonic evil, of evils we do not know and cannot name. And we thank you for his power over familiar evil, for temptation, sin, addiction, habits. We thank you for the power he has to overcome everything. And we ask that you help us by defeating our pride and strengthening our humility so we can know Jesus as he is and be strengthened in him. This we pray in the name of Jesus, your Son, conqueror of the world. Amen.